Over the past few weeks, we've spoken to 100 sales leaders around the world to understand the impact of COVID-19 on revenue. And we've combined these insights into one single report that covers the immediate impact, the commercial outlook, the tech stack that you need, and actionable advice for sales leaders. You can claim this whole report completely for free if you go to ebster.com/COVID. That's ebster.com/COVID.
I tuned into the greatest.
This is Sales Ops Demystified.
Ask about me.
You have to be closing all the time.
Always be closing.
I love what I do. When you love what you do, you want to be the best at it.
The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Learn from thought leaders in sales operations. Actionable strategies from Sales Ops Ninjas. And now, your hosts, Tom Hunt and Henry Peacock. Sales Ops Demystified.
Hello and welcome to another very special episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. Today we're joined by Todd Egan, who has over 10 years experience in the sales ops world. He's currently running sales ops at a business called SecureWorks. So Todd, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So let's kick things off and understand first how you managed to find your way into the world of sales operations.
Yeah, it's a bit of a different journey than most people. So I did that out of school for about 6 years, 6-7 years. And then from there, I moved into the white-collar space of customer service, so call center and whatnot, and then moved into an implementation. The main part of it was Melbourne, and I sort of got a role into their sales team. And that was looking after the Telstra account. So we had sort of 3 sales support people. That account was quite a big revenue spin for Dimension Data Australia. It was about 17, 18 million in annual revenue. So it was split into 3 sort of areas. And that was my first forte in mainly to sales operations, the side of things of managing from vendor relationships, distribution, reseller, margin control, quotes. So got into all that area. From there, went back into the UK with my partner, who's actually from the UK, and decided to move back to London, and then worked at Cisco underneath. They just acquired ScanSafe, looking after resellers in France and Belgium and the UK on that area. And then from there, moved to a smaller sort of startup called Control Circle. That sort of do, they were like a bit of a telco in terms of line sort of distribution from data centers. So I was there, and that was probably my first forte in terms of forecast management, more margin control, and going from like the start with marketing all the way through model. And then sort of did a bit of a deviation off there to an insurance company, which didn't really sort of work out. And then found myself at SecureWorks. Found myself at SecureWorks 6 years ago, and absolutely love the role. It's ever changing our business. So SecureWorks are part of Dimension Data. They're part of the Dell Technology Group, and it's. They used to be, at the start when they acquired SecureWorks, they were actually going to be embedded into their program, embedded into their vendor program. So that was how my sort of role. So I've sort of gone from working outdoors, mowing lawns to now running, a staff operations role, looking after, 37 sellers in EMEA.
Got it. And now to zoom in on SecureWorks. How many reps are you currently running, and what's the size of the operations team?
Yeah, so the operations team, there's 4 of us, or I manage 4 people, so there's 5 of us in total. We provide support to 37 sellers within EMEA, so that's across the Nordics, Benelux, UK, Ireland, Germany, and the Middle East. And essentially, my team is broken down into into two sort of areas. So we've got three people that sort of provide day-to-day support, and it's more like guidance, if anything. So it's around pipeline management, opportunity creation and opportunity management within Salesforce. And then also have a renewals person or renewals manager who basically looks after all of our in-store-based customers from a renewal point of view. We're trying to diversify into a SaaS sort of model at the moment. So we sell standard managed security services, and now we're sort of going into the software space. So it's a bit of a transformation period, and we provide guidance on how they can articulate their solutions to our customers.
Got it. Awesome. So I think I had about five in the ops team, and then you're supporting around 37 reps around EMEA.
Correct. Yes.
Got it. Awesome. Can you tell us a little bit more about the tech stack that you're currently running at SecureWorks?
Yeah, so it's quite diversified. I'll sort of break it in because different teams have different sort of, but they all sort of intertwine with each other. So, for instance, we will work with our marketing team who have, I believe, ZoomInfo, Eloqua, Sixth Sense, and they have another one called DemandBase. All of them as like marketing intel, providing intelligence on when a client has downloaded a white paper, jumped on a podcast or a webcast for us, has touched our website, and what are they sort of looking for? And then from that, we can feed that back into our DGR team, who also use, I think it's called SalesLoft for calling and tracking purposes. They also use LinkedIn Navigator, and also what was the other one? LinkedIn Navigator and Discover Org also too. They use from a tech stack. So all those integrate into Salesforce as our overarching CRM tool. And we also have Workday on top of that from a finance and a billing CRM area too. So those are our main areas. We also use Tableau as a visualization tool for reporting.
Got it. I didn't catch it. You guys currently using Salesforce?
Correct, yeah. We're in the middle of actually transitioning to Salesforce Lightning. So we just have we're just in that sort of period at the moment of moving our products from one area to the other.
Got it. Makes sense. Awesome. And then I want to talk a little bit about these reps. So 37, do you, as a team, do you maintain one-on-one relationships with every single rep? Like, do you work individually with them?
No, that's a really good question. So so when I first started, it was literally on a ad hoc basis. I sort of felt that in other organizations I worked at, having a more intimate relationship was of a much better value to A, the rep, and also it made the sales operations person more like they're part of that team. When there's, say, a big deal on board, they can sort of work almost like in a deal desk function. So we structure the team as it's basically a 10-to-1 ratio. It's about 11-to-1 sort of thing, really. And we break that up in terms of, I look at it from a personality point of view. So I look at, I really try and get to know my sellers, and then I marry up against the personality of my team too. And also I've got quite a long tenured team. So I've got two people that have been with us for over 7 years. I've got another person there for 4 years and one other for like 2.5 years. So I've got a quite experienced team. And we try and change it up year over year and make those people move around so they can integrate with different experiences in different countries, because every country is different how they sell. Legislation or laws that you have for selling cybersecurity. So it's good for them to get that experience in different regions and how those sellers transact their business.
Got it. And so did you say 11-to-1 as in 11 reps to one sales ops person?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of our sellers are, they know the process around forecasting, pipeline management. It's there, but we're more there as a guidance for them. And if on the bigger complex deals, we will really get stuck into and sort of helping them construct their deals in that manner. But we try and have a business where the sellers or account managers are essentially self-enabled.
Cool. Awesome. Okay. And so the next question is, do you have any tips on onboarding reps?
Yeah. So I think getting to know the reps, where they've been. I always look at it this way, that you learn off everyone that you meet, and you never stop learning. So whether they're a pre-sales person, so we onboard pre-sales guys too, because they obviously utilize our tech stack from a Salesforce point of view. So I think that's really important, is getting to understand the individual, especially in different countries, understanding their challenges, getting them to know how our business runs. Every business is different. And then just listen to, what changes we can make. I think sometimes when you're in long tenured in a company, you can be quite blinkered in terms of what other people think, and think that the way that you do things day in, day out is the right way. And I think it's important to listen to other people and sort of see if their experiences or what they did at another company can actually be utilized and improved within our own business processes.
Got it. So you're saying that just as you can educate the rep on how you guys work and your best practices, there's also a lot to learn from the rep themselves.
100%. Absolutely.
Got it. And can you, this might be a tricky question, but can you share a time of when a new rep has come in and then taught you guys something that's helped and changed your process?
Now tuned into the greatest.
This is Sales Ops Demystified.
Hello, Sales Ops people. Tom here. I'm recording this because we literally just launched what we believe to be the most comprehensive collection of Sales Ops insights. We've created the Sales Ops Handbook that you can get at ebster.com/sales-ops-handbook. And what we essentially did is, from our first 30 interviews, we collated all of the best insights from people such as Jeff at Intercom, from people at DocuSign, Lucid, Oracle, and Crowdcube. And we've crammed them into an approximately 45-page ebook, which, as I said, we believe to be the most comprehensive collection of sales ops wisdom in the world. So you can go to ebster.com/sales-ops-handbook, and you can get that for simply entering your email address.
That is a tricky question. I think every rep will sort of question, say, if you talk around forecasting, everyone's got an opinion on forecasting. There's different models out there. For instance, we had a new Middle East sales director that's just come on board, and he was going to potentially do it a different way to what we had. We already went down the way. It was not, there's no right or wrong ways. It's just what we follow at this present time, and it was more having an offline conversation with him to basically say, I understand exactly what you're going on about. This is just how we do things in a more simplified manner, and getting buy-in, but just taking his experiences on board and making sure that in the back of our mind we're actually doing things the right way also.
Got it. Makes sense. And now actually moving on to your forecasting process. How does that work? Who's involved?
Yeah, so I report into the VP of Global Sales Operations, and they're based in Atlanta. So they made a decision probably about halfway last year. So we used to have a model where it was sort of quite simple. It was basically, you had your upside, strong upside, and commit as your three pillars of forecasting. I think they felt that there was too many gray areas, and people were utilizing, upside and strong upside in the manner that they weren't really sort of all in on the commit side and that. So what they decided to do was we renamed it to expect and coverage. So essentially, if you tick the box as expect, that's you're committing, like you're all in for the quarter. And we build our sort of our win number or our close number to that number. And coverage is basically everything else. So it falls outside the bucket. If it has a close date within the quarter, that is in the coverage. So that if that expect box not ticked. So you can get quite a big distinction on, and you also know where, what your bucket is, what your pipeline is for the quarter. So, we have regular, we have a forecast call every Monday, with our sales directors, and we go through quite a rigid questioning process with them on qualification, where it's at, who are the key stakeholders that make those decisions to get to basically move those deals from a coverage point of view into the expect area. And then we also walk through, we have a close plan review also too on those cover on the expect deals to make sure that there's no slippages, the client actually understands the path to close. So we're quite transparent through with the client and also within our business. And then we also have another call on that where we relate our regional forecast up to the global or into my boss with the VP of sales or global sales operations and formulate that number, and then that rolls up to the ELT.
Got it. Okay, there's a lot to unwrap there. So
it is.
You changed three different statuses into the two. So if I'm a rep and I'm very confident a deal is going to come in this quarter, I tick expect.
Correct.
And if I have a coverage deal, which is the other category, with a close date in that quarter, then that's also added into the number that you guys use to forecast.
Correct. So it's two buckets. So instead of having three buckets beforehand, and then, or actually essentially four buckets. Because if it wasn't in upside, strong upside or commit, it's sort of like outside that region, still formulates if it has a close date. So what the business did was just simplified to have to expect and coverage. So essentially I find it quite simple. It was a bit hard to get your head wrapped around it, but it is sort of simplistic in nature.
Got it. And then the weekly call with the sales directors where you're looking at all the deals, and then anything that isn't expect, you'd work on a close plan and ensure that the clients are aware of the close plan.
We do try. We encourage our sellers to be quite transparent. So if they put something into expect, the questioning is then around like, are you sticking to that date that's listed in Salesforce? Is the client aware of that date or their timelines? Have they gone through their procedures in terms of budget sign off? Who's available to sign? Our documents and what's their process in terms of their purchase order creation. So I think it's essential for sellers to understand those key components. They're probably not the nicest of things to ask, to be honest, but I think it's really essential for sellers to understand their clients' internal processes on how long something goes through their approval procurement system. And if they have any challenges, so then you can better forecast upon when that deal will close in the system.
Got it. Okay, and I think this is a really important point. And I'm not that experienced in sales, but I don't think that many people actually do that. It's really when you're getting to the close, like learning from the client exactly what things need to happen in order for the deal to close and what the timeline normally is. I totally agree.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is a hard thing. I think it's a bit of a learning curve, and I think it's been something that we've developed over the last couple of years, to be honest. And I think I probably might speak out of turn, but I feel a lot of reps would have that they might feel that's a bit of an uncomfortable conversation, and if that puts the deal in jeopardy. But I don't feel it does. I think it shows that you're interested in their business. You want to understand their timeline, so you're not constantly asking the question of, who has to sign it, where are they? You said it last week. It's essentially you're getting a commitment from them. You're working towards an agreed time frame, and you're just following up on the steps on how to take it, and you're feeding that back into the business too for a much better and a more accurate forecast.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just like reps won't do it because they're scared it's going to hurt the deal, but actually it probably helps the deal for both sides.
Absolutely.
Cool. Okay. And then next question is, if you could only measure one sales metric for the rest of your career, which would you choose?
That's a really good question. And I had a bit of time to think about this, and it might be a little bit outside the box, but I think pipeline growth is really important. If you don't have pipeline, if you don't have a strong pipeline, you're never going to close those deals or get to your number. So we work off, a 3.5 growth rate with our sellers or pipeline. So, and I think for a business to be healthy, you need to have that big pipeline. So we're starting to have a lot more regular in-depth reviews around pipeline growth. We call it the pipeline walk. And I think it's good from that metric too, Tom, is that you can do year over year reviews. So you can actually see, but in Tableau, we can actually put our data in there. We can actually see or question, say, what the pipeline growth was in Q1 last year against where we're at right now. And we can see as a business, are we growing in the manner that we should be? And I think pipeline does sort of, show a lot more indications of how healthy your business is.
Got it. And just so I understand, so a 3.5 growth rate on pipeline, does that mean, say, if in October this year your pipeline is worth 1 million, you would expect it the previous year to be 3.5 times less than that?
So if a seller's got their quota at 1 mil, you would want their pipeline to be 3.5 mil. So they've got enough in their pipeline to actually get to their quota number. So if someone is got a target of 1 mil, but they've only got a 500,000 in pipeline, that they're going to struggle. That means that they're all in, or they need to find another $500,000 and commit it to close their number. So that's sort of the metric that we work on.
Got it. So then at any one time, you can look at the total pipeline of all reps, and then you can look at each rep's individual pipeline and understand like how close you are.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. And it's a good metric for sales directors to have those one-to-one conversations and enforce that coaching methodology in there. You can find out, is it a territory issue? Is it a rep issue? Is it a product issue? And they can start to unravel on why maybe their pipeline isn't to the value that it should be, because they're just, we want all our sellers to be successful. You don't want to see anyone sort of not hitting their quota. So those metrics are really important to sort of unravel how those sellers are successful.
Got it. Makes sense. And the final question, who has been your biggest sales ops related inspiration?
There's actually a few over the years. And I think it's funny because people will talk about, and I've listened to a few people on your podcast, and I think people always relate to people that are in sales ops. And to me, I look at more, say, like my sales, my VP of sales, Ian Bancroft, who's probably been the one that's taken me to a different level and challenged what we do or what I do personally. So it's looking more in depth into the metrics, how can you improve or enable sellers, and being his right-hand man on terms of where the business is heading and giving him that insight that he may not have. He's probably been my biggest mentor at the moment, if you want to call it that. And it's quite funny because he's more of a sales director, VP. But, I say currently it would be him.
Got it. And do you want to shout out to any of the others, or are we just shouting out to
you? And there's when I was at Dimension Data, my manager there, Louis Petrov, he's been with Dimension Data for like 20 years. Absolutely lovely guy. And he just took the time to, if you're coming into sales ops, it's quite all encompassing. You sort of touch a lot of, you are the hub of the business, I feel. So you touch marketing, product, pre-sales, sales, And depending on what your business streams are, you know, you can touch on a reseller area, distribution. And then also you've got your clients there. Whereas Louis sort of, before his experience, just broke it down really simplistic for us, step by step. Focus on one thing at a time, sort of thing, and don't become overawed by where your touch points have to get to. And he's also very big on making sure that you make your internal, like build your internal stakeholder relationships. So your keys are like, you know, finance, product, marketing, having a good relationship with your sellers. So that was the main key point from him, was always like, make sure that your relationships are solid internally, because they will help you in times where a client is quite challenging, and you can all band together to get to the, you know, the common outcome that you need to get to. And he was very good at enforcing that.
Got it. So shout out to Louis and Ian.
Yes.
So let me quickly share a few things that I liked. I've never actually heard before how you can learn from other reps' experience in onboarding to tweak your process. And I think that's a really good like mindset shift for anyone in sales ops. I like how you guys have kind of really simplified your pipeline status, whereas there's just two different areas. And that probably makes forecasting much like a much more simple process. And then finally, the quite simplistic metric you gave, but is actually a really good snapshot that any sales or sales ops person can take of the business to see the health of the sales process and each rep broken down by territory, et cetera. So those are things I liked.
Yeah, they're really, I think you captured it really well. And you know, I think, you know, I was listening to, I think it was one of your most recent ones, and, you know, win rate is really important. And it's hard to capture win rate too, but I do find that's important. But when I sort of reviewed, you know, that KPI metric, I just think pipeline is such a key metric that I think a lot of people potentially undervalue and don't talk about as prominently. But if you don't have a healthy pipeline in a business, it's not, you know, you're sort of you know, it's a long climb up the hill.
Yeah, exactly. Todd, thank you so much for coming on.
No worries. Thanks, Tom. Really enjoyed it.